All right, welcome back. My name's Andy Fordyce. I'm a telephone rep for Dow. I cover the Mid-South geography, as well as most all Alabama and a few counties in the panhandle of Florida. I'm going to be moderating this session, our panel discussion, with our three volunteers, I guess. So to go ahead and get started, I just want to have each of them kind of introduce themselves and tell you a little bit about their operations and just a little bit about themselves. So with that, we'll start with you, Mr. Bruce.
My name is Bruce Bond. I farm in southeast Arkansas at Lake Village. I farm about 2,000 acres, 1,600 acres of cotton, 400 or 500 acres of soybeans. I've been using Telone to help in my nematodes since 2000.
My name is Debbie Waters. I'm from Cordell, Georgia. I own a small precision ag company. We do a lot of data management and sell equipment and work direct for growers and other consultants.
My name is Dale Wells. I'm from Manila, Arkansas, and have a consulting business there in that area. It's in northeast Arkansas, extreme northeast Arkansas. Traditionally, we've had 100% cotton. This last year, we were down about 16,000 acres of cotton and the rest of it in grain. So kind of flowing with the times. But anyway, that's where I'm from.
Right. We're going to keep this session relatively informal. As we heard the presentations from earlier today, the more commercial university theory realm, this is your they're practicing this stuff every single day. So if there's questions that you have for the panel at large, this would be a great time to have those. And I'll open up to the floor first. Are there any questions from anybody out here? Go ahead, Dr. Cameron.
I'd just like to ask each one of you to comment as briefly as much as you want on what you saw earlier today. On the presentation. You could say one presentation or the presentations overall as a grower, as consultants, and having your own business. What are your feelings as far as your experience, the future of site-specific applications, where we are, just put your thoughts as the true client for what we're trying to do from a research standpoint. What are your thoughts on what you
saw? Well, I have a Varis map on all my fields, and we're putting out Telone in some fields. We're not doing a variable rate. We're doing an on and off. Some zones we're putting Telone on, some zones we're not. But I'm still not comfortable with that. There's something else missing. And I've talked to several people here this week. I don't know what that something else is, but my gut feeling there's one other step we need to go to get specific on just where we can put out the telephone. Our numbers are so much greater than the numbers, especially we saw from South Carolina, that we're, you know, working with.
We really just starting doing the site-specific nematode management. Before last season, we only had three growers who were doing on and off telone. Now we tried it back in like 2001, and just really couldn't get it going. Didn't feel comfortable with our zones, but this year, I think we're going to see a lot more. Now, whether our zones, what worries me is like what y'all were saying, you know, are our zones being delineated right? Are we going to pull samples out of every zone? No, we're not, because we can't really afford that. The grower can't afford that. What we have done, because we do have a plantation that we've done this on since 2005, we go in and we pull the samples out of every zone. And so we have that data to back us up a little bit. But this year, we're going in, making the maps like what you see back there on the wall, and going with off and on.
We're just really getting started in with the site-specific application also. We've had test plots up until now, and we're really just looking at getting into to field-wide applications. We're kind of in the same situation. We want to start pulling some more nematode samples in some of the zones, but golly, if you start looking at three or four zones per field and or however many, It just multiplies more and more into what we're already overcome with as far as how many samples that we're dealing with. Right now, our plan is to just look at the lighter texture soils and make our telone applications that way for this next year, and maybe get into a little bit more sampling this coming fall if the weather's better.
So when you say that, you mean that based upon the belief that you're going to have more nematodes, the reality is there's likely more nematodes in the sandier soil, you're going to treat that differently, whether you have nematode samples or not, to back that up?
That's what we're planning on for this year, but once again, we had a really bad fall, so we couldn't just get in there and pull a whole bunch of samples, so we're kind of going with all that we have to go with right now, but with the hope that, hey, we can pull some more samples and get a better idea of what we need to be doing.
See, that is what we did last year, and we saw great results. One guy had 3-bale cotton, so, you know, we just treated really about 40% of the field. We averaged anywhere between 30 and 50% of the fields, based on just the data and hand-drawing the zones.
So by predicting where you're likely to have less of a problem or more of a problem,
and putting the making the prescription map so that the telone's being applied in those areas, yeah.
I've pulled nematode samples on all my zones. And, you know, I went from 23 fields to 120-something fields, or zones. And we've pulled the samples on them. We have the numbers. I'm not sure. We're still going more by soil type than we are those numbers. And we have root knot and reniform. And the reniform numbers, you know, on the stiffer ground is where we're running our highest reniform numbers, 40,000 per pint of soil. And the last 2 years, we've been trying to put telone in those areas to see where we're running the high nematode number. But the last 2 years, we've had monsoons in the fall, and our verification strips are not, we just can't put a lot of stock in them.
Bobby.
Yeah, Mr. Bond, following up on your comment earlier, you were saying that something's missing, you know, and with Dr. Overstreet's presentation, he's talking about, and some others too, about stacking information together, and that's something of huge interest to a lot of people. You know, when you start taking all these different pieces of the puzzle and bringing them together with that, and probably you and several other people in the room are probably the closest to accomplishing that, when you start taking your soil types, your EC levels, your nematode counts, your field history, any type of aerial photography with that, how practical is that to do that on a field-by-field basis when you start overlapping that type of information?
Well,
you repeat the question.
I think and I've talked to Dr. Overstreet this morning, I think the aerial image might be a place. We have some really rank cotton the 1st of September this year. You know, we were wet and dry, but really dry is not a thing for us because we're going to irrigate. And so I'm not sure that we can't take an aerial image and show those rank areas in our fields. Middle of August, 1st September, and go out and visually look at those. If we can bring those back, maybe make a zone map from that image and overlay that with our EC readings and back to our nematode population count, maybe that's just my gut feeling. I don't know. That may be a way that we can use something like that.
You feel like you've got the technology to do that.
Exactly right. And it's like we said, it's the education thing. I don't know what we're, I know I can't interpret all that data, and that's why we're, you know, the universities have to, and they have, the university, you know, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for the University of Arkansas.
Okay, question. How, following that up, how can the universities best address the educational needs? You all are kind of where the rubber meets the road, and I'm kind of trying to get in my mind, how can we best help? It's obvious we have the technology, and more or less we have the knowledge at least to get started, but from an educational standpoint, what should we be doing?
Dean,
Money.
Okay. I don't know. I look in our situation, and we would not have gotten into the site-specific telehandler applications if Scott hadn't been there and helped us put the rig together and made the zones for us and, pushed the envelope. And I was thinking about that when I was sitting out in the audience a little while ago, that golly, it really looks like extension engineers and the pathologists need to get together and start, looking at regionalizing trials and showing kind of like a verification type program and showing how these rigs are set up. But it's got to be an in the field kind of thing. And farmers right now, kind of going back to the previous question, we're just inundated with data. We got fields that we've got EC shallow, EC deep, smart samples, grid samples, zone samples, aerial imagery, yield maps. God, we got like 10 years of yield maps and they're really nice. They make good Christmas gifts. If you frame them right. But anyway, they're just buried in all this data. And if we could just find a way to get everybody together and start showing that this stuff is practical and works.
Would workshops of some kind, or would that be a way to go about it? Or
I think maybe starting out with a workshop kind of thing, and then kind of like I said, a verification type deal where you have a field day out there where right. you can show the data from previous years and show what's going on, and hey, this is the rig and this is how you set it up. And so many of the guys in my area are just really scared of the equipment.
So the hands-off part.
Exactly. Right. They're scared. They look at it as not being user-friendly. And, hey, I've got so many other things going on, I don't have time to deal with that. And it's at a time of year when I'm having to deal with a lot of stuff.
Well, then, from a perspective of a consultant, do you feel like you got a resource that you can draw on to help them do that? Or is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is that I mean we've been blessed because Scott's been up there and pushing it, but yeah, whenever I talk to other guys that really want to get into this and want to provide this service to their farmers, they really don't know how to get the equipment set up. They don't know how to get the zones set up, and really I don't know how to set up the zones. Scott's worked with me a little bit on it, but golly, between SST toolbox and going all of our precision ag information now is in the OptiGrow system with Jimmy Sanders, and we want to utilize that and keep it all in one place. And yet we need help with that, just systems analyst and engineer and pathologist working together on it.
We actually do dealer or grower trainings for equipment. Yeah, that is part of our dealership.
Do you have workshops, or do you go out one-on-one?
We actually go one-on-one, but we started this past summer. We implemented a program where we pull all the dealers in, or all the growers in, and actually do a training for ag leader equipment. So as far as the yield monitors and the controllers go. So we did start that just because we have more and more growers using it.
Yeah.
But as far as the data management, most of the growers actually hire us to do that. They will read their yield data in and maybe print their yield maps, but any more in-depth analysis, they don't do it on their own.
Terry, I think another thing, and maybe it's just because kind of a direction I'm going, but we need to bring other folks in besides nematode guys, because it's those zones, once you have those zones, they can be used for, I use mine for fertilize and planting. And I'm convinced we're putting out too much fertilize. And, if there's a combination there of looking, and, you told me 7 or 8 years ago when I start using telon, I better buy some more picks because I was going to have to put out more picks. And that's exactly what I think we're there on. If we use telon, I think we can cut back our fertilizer a little bit. I don't know how much, but I certainly believe we can trim that rate a little bit.
Are you using the EC zones for picks?
No.
Have you thought about that? Because that was one of the things we were thinking about.
No, we tried that.
It didn't work?
We didn't like it.
Well, that's good to know.
Any other questions from?
Yes, I was interested in the comment about there seemed to me maybe some missing links in the system. This question is addressed both to this panel as well as the researcher. Has there been any correlation done between exchangeable potassium in the soils with nematode populations and yield, correlating yield with exchangeable potassium and nematode population?
Go ahead.
That sounds like a researcher question.
I'm trying to make a stab at this, but the answer is yes and no. There's some really old data that shows a real strong link between potassium nutrition to the plant and the damage that the nematodes cause. Now, it's not necessarily the number of nematodes around the plant, although that might be a secondary issue. Better the plant grows, the more nematodes, more roots it's got. You see what I'm saying? But the link between potassium and mitigation of damage has been shown from some old work, but there's not been much of anything done recently to really sort it out and figure out why that is or how to.
That the reason for my question was is maybe potassium is masking the effect yield response to these zones that are being established. A zone that may be borderline as being a zone, a boundary between zone A and zone B, may be influenced by the exchangeable potassium concentration in the soil, whereas in zone A you may have a very high potassium concentration in the soil. Zone A has been delineated based on EC or some other factor. However, zone B responds better than zone A.
It might do it. It's kind of like the foliar problems in cotton, leaf spots. There's a real strong link there too with potassium in the plant and leaf growth. Severity of disease. But it's not always correlated to how much potassium is in the soil. And I think that's kind of the case with nematodes, and you may be onto something. It may very well be that the potassium's there in some cases, but it's unavailable to the plant, so you're seeing damage, whereas in others, maybe it's a mitigating.
One of the things that we observed over the last number of years working with the site-specific work is the areas of the field where we got our greatest nematode damage, there was a lot of times always some association of a nutrient shortage, whether it was potassium, usually it was potassium, salt, or zinc. One of those three nutrients was what we tended to find. There was always some shortage there, one of those, that made the problems that much. So I think there definitely is something to nutrition, the nematode injury. We've also seen this with what we've done with our non-responsive soil, the responsive soils. Generally, our responsive soils were ones that were deficient in something. Our non-responsive ones were usually adequate nutrients, and usually there was some other better soil structure, better, a little bit more clay content. There was always something along those lines to make these non-responsive soils where you simply couldn't, you had plenty of nematodes, but you couldn't show anything. So there's something there with the nutrition involved in this equation too. And I think that's an area we need to look, we still need to look at a little bit more with how nutrition will factor into this equation, whether that's one of these missing components or whether we can do something with nutrition, that's something we still need to do a lot more work on in the future.
Well, I agree because I look at 50 or 60,000 soil samples a year, and there's a definite correlation between percent sand, which is what's been used in this presentation today. I look at it as cation exchange capacity. Mm-hmm. But there's a definite correlation between CEC and zinc deficiency, low organic matter, low organic sulfur availability, and potassium deficiency. And I think that's masking some of the effect that we're looking at in creating these zones based strictly on EC data.
It really is.
Well, that may be right. That's another one of those pieces that we need to look at, to factor in that model.
Matt.
I got a question specifically for Devin. You spoke to working with Northbrook Grower site specifically in Georgia and Florida. Can you speak to a little bit about what things you looked at when you developed those zones? I mean, you said you weren't able to pull soil samples, and then if you can speak to some of the results they experienced. And then a follow-up question to that would be, what steps can we do in the following years to the zones that we have around the state?
Okay, prior to last year, all our zones were created using EC and yield data. The new farms that we picked up that y'all worked with us on, or we worked with y'all on, they were all EC. And I would like to see some yield data incorporated in that, some soil sample data. I mean, we have no information on the soil fertility on those farms. I think going into where we're about to start running the Veris rig that we're getting, we're going to try to have not only fertility samples, but nematode samples, and try to get some of those growers to install yield monitors so that we have, at the end of the year, a true representation of the yield in that field. It's like the growers that did the work last year, they had phenomenal yields. I mean, 3-bale cotton on one, and what was the other one, like 1250 across the whole farm. But we don't know how that related in each field and how it was site-specific yield, you know, and that's what we really need to be able to determine if our zones are good and to take those zones and refine them. The way I look at an EC map like those back there, that is a one-time base map that we can do all kinds of things from after that. And we just need to start refining them. But without a yield map, they're going to be harder and harder to refine.
I may have missed something. Yep. I just came in.
Go ahead. You want to comment on that, Terry?
Well, Dr. Craig, do you want to comment on Zarium or Stephen? I'm pretty sure. I think, yeah, once again, there was quite a bit of older data that related potassium to Zarium severity and nematode severity, and, you know, all of that. But I have a personal theory, and this is just a theory. But I believe that we've got a lot more fusarium built out in a lot more fields than we think we do, because I think for the last 40 years we've selected against sensitive expression rather than always against fusarium wilt.
I just wondered if we declared fusarium wilt wasn't part of the picture.
Yeah, it definitely is, and I think it's more of a part of the picture. It's just like potash, you know, in by itself. There are all these pieces that we don't know about. Now, my feeling is we'll really begin to identify those and do research on them once a lot of folks start using these EC zones and put this into practice. That's where you find your weak spots. And then you guide research.
Dr. Cameron.
Question for you, sir. What the premise that we have, or that I have, anybody into it, is that one of the benefits of a site-specific application of a product like Telon, which is expensive by other tests, is that if you can do that, more growers be likely to use Telon. But I see, I thought I heard you say, is it already using Telon, is that you're reluctant to cut back on the amount of Telon you do use because you're satisfied, you're worried about losing the control that you're getting with the product right now. Do you think that our premise is correct, that more growers would use Telon if we could come up with site-specific, or do you think that more growers would be like you? The growers who are going to use Telon already use it, and your interest is uncertain as far as cutting back on it.
I can tell you in our area, I think the reason people don't use Telon, one, the product's hot. Kind of hard to get. we're used to filling up a 500 gallon tank and putting out a chemical, and you got to use a 110 gallon or 250 gallon tank tell on. So that's the inconvenience there. If they knew they could put it out cheaper, I believe the growers in our area would do that. Now, the problem is, I think, in our area, is going to that site specific. That learning curve is a little bit steeper. And so, historically in our area, who they've depended on for their technological data, if I can get that word out, has been their chemical dealers, who are not into that. Their equipment dealers, who are now beginning to do precision ag, maybe not site specific so much in our area, but they certainly have that capability. And I think when those two components, the chemical dealers and the equipment dealers, when they step in and give some help, I think more growers in our area will go to it, because that's just who we depend on for a lot of our help. We haven't gone the consultant route. My consultant has had a Varus rig for 5 years, and Terry has used it. Dale's used him some in Northeast Arkansas, and a couple of other folks, and that's the only business he's had, because folks have been slow. It's new, and they're not familiar with it.
That's certainly a big thing. I mean, you know, yeah, there's some competing products in our area that
there's a cheaper product that some people in our area use. It works a little better for them in their system. I think they all admit that probably Telon is a better product, but it's just the cost and the application of it.
But we saw from one of those, maybe Will Henderson, the field where he even went up as high as 4 gallons an acre using these zones, and when you pencil it out over the whole field, yeah, it averaged out 6 tenths of a gallon. That's getting pretty cheap on Milito.
Yeah, you're talking seven bucks an acre,
yeah,
roughly.
Well, when we started talking to growers about getting this EC rig and what they thought, we had a great response, and a lot of them that don't use Telone have said, yeah, they'd like to run it, and they would start using it.
Well, you can do the same thing with Temic. There are also various, yeah, Temic rigs. I mean, it doesn't have to be Telone.
That's right.
But the whole concept is placement where you need it, mm-hmm, and not where you don't. Mm-hmm.
Probably have time for one more. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but Bob, being a producer utilizing this zone system, how many nematode samples per zone do you feel is necessary to have confidence in the zones that you've delineated?
In our area, I don't think the numbers make any difference. I wish they did, but I'm not sure. 1,000 per pint of soil or 5,000 per pint of soil. I mean, you know, if you're running 1,000 per pint of soil, we see in Georgia and South Carolina, they're talking about 250. So we're way above their threshold to start with. So I'm not sure the numbers are.
I mean, the question was, how many samples per zone, nematode samples that you send to the laboratory per zone, do you feel is necessary to even have confidence in that zone?
What we did when we pulled our nematode samples, we pulled our fertilized samples too. So we probably pulled 20 cores
per zone, right?
Per zone, yeah. And I would say that most of a 40-acre field, I have large fields, but I'd say on a 40-acre field, we were down to 3 zones. We could have used more zones, but we were thinking about not having to pull so many samples. The 3 worked pretty good, especially when we laid the EC data and the yield data. Those maps were almost the same. And so that's what we did. Terry worked with us in the field, 180-acre field, and we've got 15 zones in that field. But that was a research field. But yeah, we're going to pull about 20 cores.
As one composite sample?
Yep, exactly right. Exactly right.
Your question's hard to answer because field sizes vary so much across so many fields, soil texture, teammates, fields. Common sense thing is you have a field of given size and you have that divided into three or four zones. So take an equal number of samples out of each zone. You know, use your farmer knowledge and common sense. There may be some
more
scientific approaches to
that, but a lot of times it's really clear. All right. Really, we've got data. Scott Munford did his thesis. He did a really intensive study. He had 512 little zones and four rows by 100 feet long. He sampled so much that Bruce told us he could keep them and had to bring us all back. But when you take that now, after 4 years of that, and you look at it, you got a pretty good picture of what's really in that field. And then we backed off, and Dr. Brockrock, as an exercise for his class, just got started saying, okay, guys, pretend you're sampling this and get all these patterns, just, you know, pick it different or little grids. And the absolute most effective way to do it was go based on soil. Better than zigzag patterns, better than train sets, better than anything else. Am I right on that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, once again, you know, you're taking the whole and reducing it to some biologically significant components, and then you're saying, you know, the haystack's a lot smaller. It's looking for that deep.
I still think with the zone, even with the zone, there still needs to be some limitation on how large an area that you're representing.
You know, one of the things that that we've done, most of the fields that I farm now, I've been working them from 20 to 30 years. My consultant has been looking at those fields for 20 years. So we have our zone map and we're going out there, but we've got a good feel. Even when we're when the software is drawing the zones, when we're looking at the map, we've got a good experience feel for that, and we're going to let that play into it. And also when we draw them, and I think that was something I learned early on. We know more about our fields than anyone else, and that consultant's been across that field you know, when it's 100 degrees and or when it's raining. And he's got a good feel for that. And so we use that knowledge to help when we're making our zones.
That's why we hand draw our zones, because we don't, you know, I don't trust any software to go out there and automatically do it.
If I got time for another question or two. All right, I will answer a question. Where do you guys see the future of site-specific telone or fumigants on your farm? And a second part to that question is does that future include crops other than cotton? Just across.
Well, you know, I've been a cotton farmer nearly all my life, and we've been site-specific. If you've ever tried to set a set of Dickey fenders, You've had to be precise, and now, you know, we do everything over the top. So, you know, I'm thinking, well, I was a little bit trying to be precise. I think it's going to be the way to go. We're already spraying too much chemicals. Just throw them out there because we're going through there. And I look for the day when we're site-specific on our herbicide applications. And I certainly think we're going to be there and fertilize just pretty quick. And I think it's got a great future. We just got to get a better feel for it and how to handle that, the precision part. The equipment works good. And Terry, when they showed the squeeze pump and, you know, that old thing, but now that the application stuff works really, really well, it's there. It's interpreting all that data and everything.
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the things that we've seen this last year in our area is the effect of root knot nematode on soybeans. And I really didn't think that root knot nematode really hurt soybeans that bad, but I was made a believer. We had fields where we had 10 pounds of Timic underneath susceptible group 4 soybeans. And whenever you went from the heavier soil in the combine, in that particular area, we were yielding 70 to 75 bushel beans. And as soon as you hit a sand blow in that field, it went down to 10. The average for the fields that had those susceptible varieties in them, 25, 27 bushel per acre. The rest of the farms where we did not have susceptible varieties, we were averaging 60, 65, 70 bushel, just depending upon the field. So it was just a huge difference. Like I said, that had 10 pounds of Timic underneath, 5 pounds under each drill in a twin row system. There's got to be a better way. I don't know of any truly resistant group 4 soybeans to root knot nematode. Yet in our area, if we keep going into more grain, we're going to have something. The group 5s we feel pretty comfortable with as far as having resistance. And if we could, you know, site-specific, if we can apply telone site-specific on the soybean ground, then I just think there's a huge potential there. I mean, really big potential.
What was the original question?
Where do you see the future of site-specific telone, and does that future include crops other than cotton?
I think you could use it site-specifically on any crop. I mean, I've been thinking about the vegetable growers, because we do a lot of work with produce growers, and especially getting the ZC or Varis rig, it's like, okay, those guys really put out a lot of fertilizer, and we've been doing just plain grid sampling for them, so I see them wanting this technology more than our soybean growers. I mean,
any other questions from the floor? All right, one last one to kind of sum it up. Would you or your growers be using telone today if site-specific technology was not available?
Before I got a Legacy, the Premier rig, we had another system. We just did on and off, so we were precision then. So I guess I've always put out telone, some type of site specific. Now we're automatic with it. Yeah, I don't think we can afford to go like, you know, end to end, side to side on the field. So, yeah, I think that's right.
I think we'll see more growers use it, and the ones that have stopped using it that I know of will probably go back to it now that they really can do site-specific.
I think in our area, we just have very few people using Telone. The cost scares them away, and whenever they're getting their loans for their crops and they're looking at how much they can put into that crop, that scares them away. If we went across the board with Telone, even though I think there's an economic return there, and you can tell the grower that, if he's looking at 5 pounds of Timic and he feels like he's getting good control there, then that's what he's going to go with. And away from $41 Telone, you know, that's I think site-specific's got to be where it's going to be at in our area.
Well, I'd like to thank our panel for sharing their expertise and their experiences for all their many years of experience that have been dealing with this product and doing it site specifically. At this time, we'll dismiss the panel and we'll open it up to our poster demonstrations. We'll have all of our university extension agents that gave presentation earlier today, plus a few others back there that did not give presentations but have posters to really showcase their research to you more on a one-on-one basis. We've also got Mike DeBose here with Chemical Containers, our equipment manufacturer, to show you how easy it can be to make site-specific application using the Telone application equipment that we currently use in the field. So with that, we'll just dismiss everybody to the back of the room. Really appreciate your time, and we'll be around to answer questions. Thank you.